God is the Alpha and the Omega, and He knows the beginning. He was there in the beginning, and He knows the ending. Of every story in the Bible, God knew what was going to happen before the ending. The people living the story didn't know, but God knew. That doesn't mean He's part of predestination, but He knows the characters, and He knows how their hearts are. Same way with today. God knows people, and He knows the character of every person. That's why He tries us and He tests us to see, are you strong enough to withhold and to withstand the enemy here? Are you a person I can count on, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed? Are you someone that's going to resist the enemy here so I can use you for a light? And that's why the Lord tests and tries His people to find out what kind of character we are that He can use in His story. And so I want us to go to Genesis and look at a story here and keep that in mind. God knows the ending. The characters in the story don't. But this very familiar story that we've all heard, I'm going to tell it up to a point because I know that we are familiar with this story, and it's the story of Joseph. Just a moment, let me find my notes here because this came to me so much. Genesis 41. But before that, I want to tell, we all know how Jacob had 12 sons. Jacob's name was changed to Israel. He had 12 sons. And Rachel was his favorite wife. It's just in the scripture that way. And she had two children. She had Joseph and Benjamin. And she died when she was having Benjamin. So that made those two boys even more special to Jacob's heart. I'd say, really, he was not wise in picking favorites. That's not a good thing for parents to do. We can learn from the mistakes of those that made them in the Bible. But anyway, that's how it was. And we know the story how he made a coat of many colors for Joseph, and it made the brothers jealous. Not only that, but it kind of seems like Joseph was a little bit of a tattletale brother. And the other brothers kind of, you know how family dynamics are, resented him. Because he probably was a little bit of a pest, just to put it bluntly, if you read in the passage of scriptures there. So he had this dream, you remember? And he dreamed that his sheaf was standing up in the field, and the other 11 sheaves fell and bowed before his. And then he had another dream, and he dreamed that he was in the stars, and the other stars bowed, the 11 stars bowed, even the moon and the sun. And that kind of struck his father. He said, you mean even your mom and your father, you know, your family, your parents are going to bow to you? And Joseph, like I said, being a little brother, big mouth, told these dreams, made him very unpopular. And so it was, we know how, when the brothers were out in the field watching over the sheep and long ways off, and the father, Jacob, said, Joseph, go and check on your brothers. And we know how he went to check on them. And when they saw him coming from afar, they said, whoa, here comes that dreamer. We are going to catch him now. We're going to put him out. And they wanted to kill him, but Reuben stood for him. He said, no, don't kill the brother. We don't want to shed his blood. So they said, let's just put him in this pit. And while he was in that pit, crying for his brothers to let him out, they were eating. And here comes the Ishmaelites. Grand procession. They probably had lots of gold and jewelry. Their camels were ringing with bells. Here comes the Ishmaelites. Now, Reuben went to check on the flock, but the other brothers were there, and among themselves they said, we'll just get rid of that little brat. We'll sell him to the Ishmaelites. They're going to Egypt, and they need slaves down there, and he can be a slave, that little dreamer. I'm paraphrasing. But anyway, that's what they did. We know the story. They sold Joseph into slavery. And so it was, when Reuben came back and saw his brother was gone, he was distressed. What am I going to do? What are we going to tell Dad? And they said, oh, well, let's just take this coat Dad made him, put some goat's blood on it, and we'll just tell Dad he got killed by some bad beast out in the field. Dad won't know the difference. And that's what they did. And they thought they got away with it. And they never told their father what they did. Kept this among themselves. Don't you know those brothers had a guilty conscience? Don't you know sometimes they'd look at one another and say, if you do so-and-so, I'm going to tell Dad you're the one that sold Joseph. You know, maybe they had some of that among them, but they surely probably weren't happy. They had that guilt on their soul, on their conscience. We know how Joseph went into Egypt, was sold, and finally he became, he was in prison, and the butler and the baker had a dream. I'm going fast through it. He was had two times there with Potiphar's wife and things like that where he resisted her and then was put in prison. So he was in there in prison, and the butler and the baker both had a dream. The baker's dream was about the bread and the birds coming to take from the basket, and the butler had a dream about being restored. Anyway, Joseph said, the baker's going to die, and the butler's going to be restored back to his position. But whenever you're restored back, he said to the butler, remember me. Remember me. I'm here for no reason down in this prison. And so it was that what Joseph predicted about the dreams happened, and the butler was restored. But he forgot about Joseph for 2 years. Joseph was left there in prison for 2 years until Pharaoh himself had a dream. Remember, he had a dream about seven cows coming up out of the river, and they were fat and big cows, and then seven other cows came and just ate up those fat cows. And that was Pharaoh's dream. And he was troubled about it, and he mentioned it to the butler, and the butler said, I remember this fellow down in prison, and he was able to interpret dreams. It seems like the Spirit of God was with him. He was able to make other men do things and obey him, and he just had a spirit about him that was people liked. And so Pharaoh said, call him up. Let me see what he can do about my dream, if he can interpret it. And so it was, Pharaoh called Joseph up. Pharaoh said to him, I had this dream. I want you to interpret it. And Joseph interpreted it correctly. He told him, he said, there's going to be 7 years of plenty. So much plenty that there'll just be enough to waste. But then there's going to be 7 years of famine. And the people are going to become hungry and starving. And Pharaoh said, that sounds like a good interpretation of the dream. So what should I do about this dream? What should I do? And Joseph said, this is what I would do if I were Pharaoh, if I had position to do so. During the 7 years of plenty, let's build granaries, big barns and granaries, and store the excess. Don't let it go to waste. And then when the 7 years of famine come, the people will have food to eat. Pharaoh said, and this is starting now in Genesis, right here, the 41st verse. Pharaoh said, that's a good plan. That's a good plan. Let's do that. And I will make you the one to do over it. In Genesis 41, about 37, and the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God has shewed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according to all thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand and arrayed him in vesters of fine linen and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried before him, bow the knee. And he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. Pretty powerful position, coming from prison to being the second in the kingdom over or under Pharaoh. So Joseph began to do what he had told Pharaoh he would do. In the 46th verse, it said Joseph was 30 years old when this happened. He was 30 years old. He was still a young man. And the Pharaoh gave him to wife one of the women, and he had two sons. So it was that the land was plenteous. 49th verse, and Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea, very much, until he left numbering, for it was without number. And unto Joseph were born two sons, and it goes on down. He named the first one Manasseh, and the second one he named Ephraim. And then in the 53rd verse, and the 7 years of plenteous that was in the land of Egypt were ended. And the 7 years of dearth began to come, according as Joseph had said. And the dearth, which was a famine, was in all the lands. But in the land of Egypt, there was bread. And when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, Go unto Joseph. What he saith to you, do. And the famine was over all the face of the earth. And Joseph opened all the storehouses. And he sold unto the Egyptians. And the famine waxed sore in the land of Egypt. And all the countries came into Egypt to Joseph for to buy corn, because of the famine was so sore in all the lands. Now, do you get the picture of what Joseph did here? Very, very business-fied, wasn't it? Very business-minded. He took the increase from the people. The people plowed the fields, brought in the grain, and there were so much, Joseph said, just give it to us. Give us. We got these. He probably had slaves build the granaries and the barns, and he said, give it to us. Give it to us. You got so much. They freely gave it to him. But when it came time for them, when they were hungry, what did he do? He didn't say, oh, I'll start freely giving it out to you. I'll freely give it to you. He said, I'll sell it to you. Notice that? I'll sell it to you. You catch that? He was making Pharaoh rich. Very common practice. It's happening in our world today, too. We're going to find parallels in a minute, just a little bit. But think of that. The people freely gave it to Joseph. They had so much. We live in a land of plenty, right? So much. And then he kept it and stored it. And he said, oh, now you're hungry. The land is dry. There's no rain. Your crops are wilting in the field. Your cattle are dying because there's no food for them. The fields are dry and barren. And you're hungry? Your little ones are crying. Have you ever had a baby cry and cry because it's hungry? I mean, we don't really have that in our country, because we usually can get something pretty quick for a baby that's crying. But they had children, little children. And they were hungry, starving. There's no food in the cabinet, Dad. There's nothing to eat. Oh, well, let's go and see. There's a storehouse. And Joseph says, puts guards over the storehouse, and he said, you can have some, but I want your money. Gold, jewelry, whatever you have, you can have some food. You know, hunger is a powerful driver. It drives people to do things sometimes they shouldn't do. It drives people to get something because they're hungry. I want something to eat. My body is hungry. My children are hungry. And it was that way also with Jacob. His family was hungry. And he said to his sons there, he said, we don't have any food. The children are crying. The cattle are dying. You know, they're skinny. We can't get milk from the cows because they're bare. There's nothing here. Go to Egypt and buy. Go buy some food. And that's what they did. And so it was, we know the story, how they came before Joseph. He knew them, but they didn't know him, didn't know Joseph. And they bowed before him. They brought their money. And of course, we know how Joseph said to them, you're just spies. You've come here to find out the land. No, no, we have a father at home. And he sent us to bring back some food. We're hungry. We know the story. God knew it too. But when those people were living it, they didn't know the story. They didn't know the ending. All they knew at the time, during that famine, all Israel or Jacob knew was, I am hungry, and I want my family fed. And so he sent those sons, his 10 sons, to go and get bread or really feed grain from Egypt. We know the ending of the story because we read it in the Bible. But when they were living it, they did not know who that was that stood before them. They did not realize that they were fulfilling what God had predicted would happen. They just were living their life. But God knew their character, and he knew who was going to do what. He knew their characters, their personalities. And so it is today. God knows who he can trust, and he knows people's characters. And I want to be someone that God can count on. I want to be someone that God can say, I know if I put that person in position, they will hold to the truth. Like we are this morning, they will stand. It has to have conviction. We have to have conviction in our heart. Because hunger is a force out there that the enemy will use to cause people to do things they shouldn't. There's not only just the hunger of the body, there's also people that have a hunger for knowledge, hunger to know things, and sometimes things they really don't need to know, or things above, to be great. I want to have power. My hunger, I talked about power last Sunday, hunger to be powerful, and they'll do things because of that drive of hunger to be powerful. And like I said, these scammer people that do scams, why do they do that? What's behind doing that? To steal from somebody. What is that? What causes that? What's that drive in the person? Isn't that a hunger to get something from somebody else that I don't have, and to take and use it for me instead of you having it? I'll take it. I read a book whenever I was in high school. I did a lot of book reading when I was young. I still do some, but I did more then. And we had a library program. They wanted us to read books that were college level. Anyway, the one book I read was called The Good Earth. I don't know if you've ever read it. It's probably not, I don't know if it's in circulation today, but I'll just tell you the general part of it. It was written back in 1960s, and it was telling about how Chairman Mao took over China. And the opening of the story is of a man that owned a plot of land, and it was by the big wall of the rich man. And he owned this plot of land. He was very proud of it, and he worked it, and he was able to make enough crops to supply for himself and his needs. And he thought, I would like to get married. I would like a wife. But I'm such a poor man that I can't afford to pay the dowry of a rich woman for a rich woman. So he said, I'm going to go to the rich house and ask if I can have one of the servant women. By one of the servant women. And that's what he did. He went to the rich house and he said, bought one of the servant women to be his wife. And for her wedding gift, the rich person gave her a big, beautiful pearl. Gave her a pearl for a wedding gift. And she treasured that pearl. She kept it close to her heart. She treasured that pearl very much. And anyway, there's a lot in the story. But as the story goes on, the government began to tell the poor people, the rich people have it all. The rich people have it all. Go get it. Go get it. You're hungry. And they made them hungry. They had food in their railroad cars, but the government would not open up the grain and the food for the people, and they let it rot in the grain cars so the people would be hungry. This was the beginning of the revolution. And they had the Red Band Army and the Red Band. Anyway, there's a lot of part to the story. But this is a true story that was written. Anyway, they said, go and take from the rich people. They have the food. You all are hungry. And so they did. One time when they just rose up the poor people and they began to run over the walls into the rich people's places and take things from them. And this poor man that had his wife, she said, that is people I know. I don't want to do that. And he said, keep that pearl. Keep that pearl. That pearl is important. Well, as the story unfolds, what happened is, after they took from the rich, then they began to take from the poor. And he said, no, I will not give up my land. This piece of land was given to me by my ancestors, my father, my great-grandfather, my great-great-grandfather, and I won't give up this land. And they were wanting to take the land, but see, the thing was, you take the people's land, and then they become dependent upon the government to feed them. And that's what was happening. They said, you can't possibly survive on that little piece of land. We want your land too. We've taken all the other. He said, I have a pearl. My wife has a pearl. Will you let me alone if I give you this pearl that I have? And she cried when he took the pearl. And he said, it's to keep the good land. We've got to keep our land because the land supports us. That's how we can keep our freedom, is to be able to feed our own family from our own land. They had 3 or 4 children. And she said, you're right. You're right. We've got to keep our land so we can feed ourselves. And that's kind of the way the story goes. There's a lot to it, a lot of detail. But it was an eye-opener that people, when they are driven by hunger, will do things to obtain what they should not in the wrong way if they're built and driven that way. Does that make sense? It was an eye-opener to me when I read that story. But it's an old practice. It's in the Bible. If you go to the story of Gideon, go to Judges, the 6th chapter. This is a story of Gideon. Do you know what was going on at that time? Why the people were so distressed? If you read this story, and again, I'm just going to paraphrase some of it. This is in Judges, the 6th chapter. But the children of Israel turned away from worshiping God. Our peace is in God. And as I said to begin with, those that hunger and thirst after righteousness shall be filled. The children of Israel, time and time again, would not listen to God. They would not obey Him. He simply asked for them to bring sacrifices and for their sins and worship Him and not worship other gods, but keep Him first in their life. But the devil, as he was, has always been, deceived the people and made them feel they had to worship as the heathens did around about them. And so they would follow after other gods, which displeased God. And here it is in Judges, the 6th chapter. It says, and the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian 7 years. The Lord delivered them. It was a punishment. Just like it was with the children of Israel back, I didn't go ahead and I guess finish the story about the children of Israel. We know after that they had come to Joseph and they got their grain, and then Joseph had them bring their father and all. In time, they became slaves to Pharaoh because of their drive for food, coming into Egypt, to the land of plenty. They stayed there, but in time, we all know this story, right, about the Israelites and how they became slaves to Egypt. And then, of course, God brought up Moses, and Moses helped deliver them. It's brought out in this story. So it was that the Lord allowed them to be under the Midianites. You know what the Midianites were doing? If you read through this passage, what they were doing was, whenever the children of Israel would plant their crops, and it, just before harvest, when it was time to harvest the wheat, harvest the corn, the grapes and the food that they had, you know, planted and built up and taken care of, the Midianites would come in a big army and just take all their food. Just take it. They would fight them, make them stay in their homes. I mean, it'd be, just imagine, you know, you've got a garden and you got it planted, and just before you go out to harvest your grain, your crop, here comes the bad enemy and just takes it all. And they didn't have grocery stores to go to. They didn't have the Red Cross or DHS to call for food, you know, food stamps, nothing. That was their food. And then they would have nothing to eat for the whole winter. And then they would plant again in the spring, and again the Midianites would come in right before harvest and take their food. Just take it. Steal from them. That's what they were doing here. And they were distressed. They said, they're too powerful for us. We don't have an army to fight against them. They come in and they take our food. And they were even taking their oxen and cattle, I think it says here. And they encamped against them and destroyed the increase of the earth. All thou came into Gaza and left no substance for Israel, neither sheep nor ox nor ass. For they came up with their cattle and their tents, and they came as grasshoppers for multitude. For both they had their and their camels were without number, and they entered into the land to destroy it. And Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites, and the children of Israel cried unto the Lord. They were not able to eat. They had no substance. And they said, "What can we do, God? We have nothing to stop them. No gates, no fence, no borders. And they're coming in and doing this over and over. We're tired of it." And it came to pass when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord because of the Midianites, that the Lord sent a prophet unto the children of Israel, which said unto them, "Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I brought you up from Egypt, and brought you forth out of the house of bondage, and I delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians, and out of the hand of all that oppressed you, and drove them out from before you, and gave you their land. And I said unto you, I am the Lord your God. Fear not the gods of the Amorites, in whose land ye dwell, that ye have not obeyed my voice. I brought you out. You know the story of your ancestors. And I've helped you. And I've told you, worship me only. I'm the God that delivered you. Thou shalt have no other gods before you but me. But you've not obeyed me. You didn't listen to my voice." Then the Lord had mercy upon them. And there came an angel of the Lord and sat under an oak which was in Ophrah that pertained unto Joash the Abazite, and his son Gideon threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. He was trying to do this secretly so that they wouldn't be caught and found. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him and said unto him, "The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor." And Gideon said unto him, "Oh, my Lord, if the Lord be with us, why then has all this befallen us? And where be all his miracles which our fathers told us of, saying, Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord hath forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites." He's complaining, isn't he? If you're with us, then why are we starving? Why are you letting these Midianites come in and destroy and shame us? And the Lord looked upon him and said, "Go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee?" And he said unto him, "O my Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? Behold, my family is poor in Manasseh." Who's Manasseh? He's Joseph's oldest son. "And I am the least in my father's house." And the Lord said unto him, "Surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man." God knew his character. He did not feel worthy. He said, "I'm little, I'm the least of the least. Nobody is going to listen to me." But the Lord said, "You're the man I've chosen, not because you're great and mighty and have a big name, but because," why? "Have respect to me. You've got respect toward me. Your heart is wanting to serve me, and I've chosen you because you have a character that will stand against the enemy by my power and by my grace." And this is 17th verse. This is Judges 6 and 17. "And he said unto him, If now I have found grace in thy sight, then shew me a sign that thou talkest with me." I'd probably want that too. "Depart not hence, I pray thee, until I come unto thee and bring forth my present and set it before thee." And he said, "I will tarry until thou come again." So Gideon went out and he made ready a kid and an unleavened cake, and he put it out. And the angel of the Lord said, "Take the flesh," this is the 20th verse, "and pour it out and lay the cake and the meat on the rock." And when Gideon did so, the angel brought forth his staff and touched it, and it flamed up. And then it was Gideon knew that he had been speaking with the angel of the Lord. And the Lord said unto him, the 23rd verse, "And the Lord said unto him, Peace be unto thee. Fear not, thou shalt not die." Then Gideon built an altar there unto the Lord and called it Jehovah Shalom. And to this day it is yet in Ophrah of the Abizzites. I'm sorry. So the Lord was with Gideon. And we know how he brought him to might, by letting the people know he was over them and that he had the power of God with him. He also was the one that put the fleece out, and the Lord made it to be, I think, wet one time and then dry the next. Be dry only. So the Lord showed to Gideon, "I am with you." And Gideon, not by might, but by just 300 men. Remember, they had the vessels. God told them to take those vessels and go and circle around. He also was the one that saw the dream, heard them about the dream. Anyway, the point I want to bring out is God was with him, and God helped him, but he knew Gideon's character, and he knew Gideon was someone he could count on and depend on. Gideon didn't know the end of the story. When he was first approached by the angel of the Lord, he didn't know what was going to happen at the end. He just knew he had to have God's help. And so it is with us today. When the Lord calls upon us, we don't always know the end of the story. We don't know what the Lord's going to do. But we must be ready and willing to do his bidding so that he can use us in a mighty way. When Jesus was on this earth, remember, it was food that really caught the people's attention. It was food that made them want to make him a king. In John, the 6th chapter, Jesus did the miracle of feeding the 5,000. We know this story too. I won't go into detail. But after Jesus made the people to sit down and he fed them with the loaves and the fish, and they realized he could do this miracle, they said, "Oh, we want to make him a king. We want him to be our king. He fed us all, and just with a little bit." And I'm going to say this not to be light, but, you know, people, even today, magic is a big thing. It gets people's attention. I mentioned that the other day. There's magicians, and they're really built up in our country, it's sad to say. Really bad. It's of the devil. Magicians and doing these tricks and things that people are fascinated with. And I would say that in some people's minds at that time, they thought of Jesus that way. He's able to do this magic trick. Great, wonderful works. Just food out of nowhere. Well, we won't have to buy bread anymore. We'll never be hungry, you know? That was in their mind, right? Because you can see how shallow they were later in the conversation. When Jesus talked to them and he said, "I'm the bread of life, and I'm going to give my body for you." And they couldn't understand that. And it was mysterious talk. It was spiritual talk. They couldn't quite grasp it. In fact, to some of them, they thought he was talking about being a cannibal. Yeah, literally eat him, literally drink his blood. I can't take that. And so they left Jesus. You'll find that. That's in the 6th chapter. I'm just telling it. He said, "He that eateth my flesh," this is 6 and 56, "he that eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood dwelleth in me, and I in him. As the living Father has sent me, and I live by the Father, so he that eateth me, even he shall live by me." That's pretty strong words there. "This is the bread that which came down from heaven, not as your fathers did eat manna and are dead. He that eateth of this bread shall live forever." These things he said in the synagogue as he taught in Capernaum. Many, therefore, of his disciples, when they heard this, said, "This is a hard saying. Who can bear it?" And they left him. Said, "We can't bother. We can't go there." The physical hunger of a person, well, like I said, caused them sometimes to do things. I think COVID was an example to me of how people will become so paranoid about things whenever, I'm not wanting to downplay it, but people will get desperate when it comes to food too. When people feel that they're being threatened, when they feel that their physical livelihood is threatened, or their physical body is being threatened, people will panic. Are we like that too? But what we have to do is we have to tune in to the Lord and live by the Spirit. Lord, help us. Because the devil is sly. He's a scammer. He's a scammer out there. And he wants to panic people and make people afraid and fearful. And he's good at it. And when people become afraid and panic, they do sometimes things in a hurry. When they look back at it, they think, "Why did we panic? You know, have you ever been trampled by a stampede? When I was in high school, I was in band. And I'll just tell this. I was first chair flute, and we were getting ready for a parade. And all the band was all hyped up about it. And our band director was telling us where we were supposed to go to meet him after school, before the parade, and all this stuff. And the bell rang, and the doors opened, and I jumped up out of my seat and ran toward the door. I was the first at the door, but somehow I had a small flute case. Somehow I tripped over the threshold. I don't know how I did it. But when I tripped, I fell like this on the floor, face forward. And do you know, those students ran over me. They stepped on me. They hit me in the head with their trombone case and their bassoon case. And they stepped on me. And I started hollering, "Stop it!" And I think I said, "Idiot." I don't know what I was telling them. "Stop it! Stop it! You're stepping all over on me." And they just kept running. And they literally stepped on me, on my back, on my legs, on my arms. And I was very unhappy. You know, people can do things sometimes in a wild way when they panic or they get excited. Beware of those kind of excitements and those kind of panic alarms that the world gives out. Beware of them, because it can also cause us to lose sight of eternal values and what God wants for us. He wants characters that can stand against the wiles of the devil, that will be discerning. And I'm praying for the Lord to help me too, because we hear these alarms, and I know, and there's things going on in our world, we all know. But Lord, help us to keep focused on the bread of life. Keep focused on eating the manna from above, that's from Jesus. And let us have our hearts turned into listening to him. Because Jesus then said to the disciples that was with him there, when Jesus knew in himself that his disciples murmured at it, he said unto them, "Doth this offend you? What, and if ye shall see the Son of Man ascend up where he was before?" Jesus said, this is John 6 and 63, "It is the spirit that quickeneth, the flesh profiteth nothing. The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit and they are life." So what Jesus is telling them is, you're going to be persecuted. There's going to be some denial, self-denial, walking and following me. And surely those disciples had that. They were all martyred except for John, and he suffered. He was boiled in oil and exiled to the Isle of Patmos. But Jesus said, live by my words, and let the spirit that quickeneth you within be your guide, their life. That's warnings. For Jesus knew from the beginning who they were that believed not and who should betray him. He knew their characters. And he said, wherefore said I unto you that no man can come unto me except it were given unto him of my Father? From that time many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him. Then said Jesus unto the 12, will ye also go away? And what did Peter say? I love this. Yes, Peter said, Lord, to whom shall we go? Thou hast the words of eternal life. And we believe and are sure that thou art that Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered them, have not I chosen you 12, but one of you is a devil? And he spake of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, for he was that should betray him, being one of the 12. So my thought tonight is, hunger after righteousness. And when we hear of things in the world, and yes, there are things taking place that are sad and grievous, the devil's behind it. We know in the last days, and I believe we're in the last days, that perilous times will come. They'll be lovers of their own selves, disobedient. We used to hear Sister Lottie Porter quote that a lot there from 2 Timothy, I believe it is, where it talks about the last days, and we see it happening. Let us not be caught up in the things where we can't focus on the Lord, and I pray nothing like COVID comes about again, but I pray that we'll have strength to know how to withhold and withstand and to keep our integrity with the Lord if things happen where the enemy tries to shut us down, tries to cause us to waver. Let us hold fast with the truth that God is going to help us and bring us through. And we don't have to be afraid of those that can kill the body, but let's be afraid of who? I used to think that was the devil. No, it's the Lord. It's the Lord. Judgment. And that's in John, where it says, don't be afraid of those that can kill the body with the sword and the spear, but be thou afraid of him who hath control, or who can destroy both soul and body. There it is. Destroy both soul and body in hell. And that is the Lord. Let's keep our integrity with the Lord. It's a challenge to me because I want to be true to the Lord and not let the enemy of the world be able to deceive and to cause me to waver in my faith in the Lord. But I want to be true to him. My message, my thought is to encourage.